Welcome to a new episode of the Retail Talker podcast. My name is Wolfgang Krockmann, and I'm happy that you want to listen to me and my guests. Today I'm joined by Kieran Yukin, CEO and founder of the furniture brand Swift.
I thought it was very strange that, you know, you mentioned Mercedes-Benz, you can go and buy one today and drive away with it the same day. But if I want to buy a sofa, I have to wait for 8 weeks. It's just, That's just crazy. I just, you know, naively thought to myself, I guess like every other person who starts a business, is how hard can it be? 7 years later, I can tell you, incredibly hard, incredibly painful. Retail, in theory, shouldn't exist. If it was just a monetary transaction, goods for a price, we would all just go to factories and buy a piece ourselves, and we would go out of our way to find the lowest possible price, and retail wouldn't exist, but it does. Yeah. And it exists because shopping itself is a behavior that people like to take part in.
Yeah.
When retailers forget that, that's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, we have all this data and we forget that the fundamental driver for people is that it's a behavior they engage in that makes them feel good. We have to make them feel good.
Yeah, it's all about, absolutely.
Swift is a direct-to-consumer furniture brand best known for its modular, tool-free sofas that can be delivered as fast as next day. That's really unbelievable. We talk about why Kieran started Swift after seeing how much lead time inefficiency exists in traditional upholstery, what it took to convince retailers and sponsors that fast furniture delivery could actually work, and how Swift is expanding from the UK and Ireland into Germany, including the surprising differences in what Germans and Brits actually buy. We also dig into physical retail, product design philosophy, and where Swift is heading next. Ein kurzer Hinweis, wie man hört, wurde diese Folge auf Englisch aufgenommen. Für alle, die lieber auf Deutsch lesen möchten, findet ihr in den Shownotes eine ausführliche Zusammenfassung der wichtigsten Themen und Aussagen aus dem Gespräch mit Kieran. Okay, let's go!
Thank you, Kieran. Having time today and being my guest here in the Retail Talker podcast, and really talking about someone who has invented something, I should always almost say, and it will be very interesting to hear what exactly you have done and what your plans are going forward, because I know you have some bigger plans for not only for the UK but as well for Germany and for the outside the e-commerce or the pure e-commerce business.
Yeah.
So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Great. Starting, can you give a short description what Swift is doing?
Sure. So Swift is a direct-to-consumer homewares brand. We are probably best known for our modular sofas that build together. The best way I can describe them is they're like Lego for grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Everything just pieces together without any tools, and there's only one way to build it, so it all feels very intuitive, very easy, very quick and very simple. And we deliver them directly to your home as fast as next day, but within a few days for most destinations. And we have since branched out into other areas of the home with dining and living and beds, but all under the same principle of extremely fast lead times, very high product quality, very well engineered, designed for kind of mass production and engineering excellence rather than traditional upholstery, which can be quite, you know, focusing on the handmade or the unique one-off piece just for you, just for your home, which I have a fundamental kind of aversion to that pitch, which we can probably get into. But that's the business in a nutshell. We're 7 years, 6 years old now. We launched just before COVID, and we operate in three markets at the moment: Ireland, the UK, and Germany.
Okay, great. Yeah, that I mean, I'm sure for Germany, who has built up his apartments with IKEA and is a nation of building things together, that that gives a bit an easy ground, you know, and understanding. But I know there are differences. I don't want to compare you with IKEA, but
well, you know, IKEA is an amazing business. I just think that there's for whatever reason, and it's probably beyond my kind of pay grade to understand it, the IKEA furniture always comes alongside a justification of, you know, I bought this, it's from IKEA, but, or it's from IKEA and I have it until. There's always some extra justification, which I think is quite sad, because furniture should be something you love and are proud of. It's design led, it's aesthetic, you want it, you want to buy it, you want to be proud of it. And we want to make furniture pieces and homewares that, you know, you're proud to show people. And you know, I joke with my team that your sofa, particularly your sofa, is probably one of the only things in your life you buy and you care what your friends, your partner, your mum, and your children think.
Yeah.
And it's very rare in life you care about all of those people and what they think for the exact same purchase.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. We're coming later a little bit to the customer behavior in Germany, but when you mentioned people are sorry to mention that they bought something at IKEA, Germany is loves discount and low prices on the one hand side, but there were times we love Mercedes, Porsche, BMW as well, which is high quality, you know. So, and when IKEA started, and I know these times very, very well, that was very simple. Very, very simple. You can't compare it with what they are doing today. And probably it comes from that time, because today, I mean, if you put together your apartment from IKEA, probably it doesn't look any worse, or not even better than others. Yeah. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very fair, very fair point. And the experience is very different to our product, I guess. You know, there's been probably, I'd like to think we've created less divorces and domestic arguments than IKEA has in terms of the experience of building it. You know, we've all been there, right? With the tax on the back of the wardrobe and asking, you know, four people to help you. I'd lift the thing up and it doesn't fold it. Yeah, but there's some more practical pieces as well, you know. It's very hard once you build an IKEA piece of furniture to then get it back out of that room or take it apart again. You just can't do it. So, you know, for us, the assembly and disassembly is important. We think people are much more transient than they used to be. They move more frequently and they're thinking ahead further in terms of, is this piece going to last? Can I take it with me? You know, people end up leaving sofas in houses, like, because they can't get it out again. And you just think it's a real shame. So we tried to solve those problems of city living, really.
Yeah. What brought you to go into, let's say, into the water where the sharks are big, like IKEA is, and say, well, I will start from the scratch and with one sofa only?
Yeah, well, you know, it was probably the ignorance of youth that did it. I was, you know, a young man, and I was working in another furniture business as an operations director. Bespoke, very high-end furniture, so I could see how, like, the very high end of the market was operating, and I could just see there was an extreme amount of wastage, and I kind of came up with the idea for Swift and the fast delivery sofas as a kind of antidote to that. I thought it was very strange that, you know, you mentioned Mercedes-Benz, you can go and buy one today and drive away with it the same day, but if I want to buy a sofa I have to wait for 8 weeks. It's just that's just crazy. Like, I've got a manufacturing background and I knew that there's arbitrage and wastage in that window of time. You know, what time is a waste in manufacturing? And I just, you know, naively thought to myself, I guess like every other person who starts a business, is how hard can it be? You know, 7 years later, I can tell you, incredibly hard, incredibly painful. And I carry the scars from the sharks, but I just couldn't escape this idea that there was a a different way to approach a very traditional industry, especially upholstery. And it just, you know, turns out all it took was someone being stupid enough not to know better, which was me.
Okay. So, and you, well, you were a little bit in the furniture business, but originally you were coming from chemical industry as an engineer or so.
Yeah, that's right. I was in what I like to now call grown-up industries, proper industries. You know, not to disrespect furniture, but, you know, where the risks are a lot higher should something go wrong. You know, if you make a sofa the wrong size, it's, no one's going to get hurt. But in chemicals and automotive, it's very serious. So the rigor and the operational excellence that I was used to in the early part of my career was just completely missing in everything I saw within furniture. You know, the big players aside, everyone else in the UK especially, it was very cottage industry, very small, very, you know, quite wasteful, ad hoc, you know, all of those things. And I just thought that we can do, you know, we can strive to be better than this. And there's room for a consumer brand. Originally, I thought the brand, I thought of the idea as to be a manufacturing solution for other retailers. I wasn't a retailer, so I didn't want to do it as a retailer. I wanted to present the manufacturing and the supply chain solution to retailers. So I went round with one in the back of my car and I pitched it to all the big retailers in the UK, and they all said, no, you're crazy. No one wants a sofa quickly. This will come across as cheap. We will undermine our own business model. We, how will we explain to customers that some sofas are fast and some are slow? So everyone said no. And I, at that point, I was like, brilliant. This is a great idea.
Yeah, definitely. I'm happy that you exist, because 12 weeks waiting time for a sofa is really, you don't understand. I always thought it must be a very difficult process to build a sofa, but reading about what you have done, I learned that it's much more easier.
Yeah, that's it. And it's just a, you know, when even when I was in the bespoke world, you know, sofas of 10,000 plus euros per sofa, maybe 15,000 euros.
Yeah.
This is 10 years ago. So that's a lot of money. And, you know, they were with, you know, for designer fabrics going to high net worth individuals and celebrities. And it takes 8 hours. Like, that's how long it takes. Your hands on work time is 8 hours. So, you know, if that's the actual time on the stopwatch to make it, then the rest, the 11 weeks, 6 days and 16 hours is waste. And why have we built an industry that puts that waste onto the consumer? And there are lots of reasons and incentives that why businesses do that. But, you know, our waste as an industry should not become the consumer's problem.
So that means you took out the air of all the logistic waste and time in between the order and delivery. But that includes as well all the other service parts where you do not have such a, impact or influence as if being your own manufacturer, like the delivery, for example.
Yeah, so we outsourced some of our delivery, but we worked with a courier to get this next day offering. So we've kind of trained them and they've trained us, and we've worked together to do that, to bring it to the market as a solution, which we're doing in Germany as well. Like, you know, next day delivery for appliances and two-man in the UK is relatively common. And when we went to launch in Germany, we found that no one was doing it. So we spoke to our UK courier and said, look, should we go and launch in Germany together? And, you know, they said yes, and that was great.
Okay.
And that's what we've done. So we're bringing that across. And that's kind of the mindset we've had to have, is like, if we don't do it, we have to go and educate our partners that actually this is what we need to do. And we'll help you get there and we'll help you figure it out, but can you work with us and, you know, have some belief that the you know, if you build it, the customers will be there for us.
Okay. And it is really, like you said at the beginning, there's one big box coming into your house or apartment, and everything is inside.
They're actually split to make the boxes a bit lighter to move around. They're normally two or three boxes. Yeah. But yeah, it's very easy. You open it up. There's minimal packaging inside. We try and keep all that waste to a minimum if we can. And you take it out and you build the base first, then you slot the arms in, then you slot the back in, put the cushions on top. And then when you look at it, you would never know.
Mm.
You know, you'd never know it came in a box. The box is just a function to protect it through a courier network. You know, mm. it's not about the box. It's about the immediacy, the mm. journey of changing that lead time, which is kind of a journey of disappointment, into a journey of delight. You know, you order today, you get it tomorrow, or the day after, whichever date you choose. And, you know, hopefully by narrowing that window, we can build a better brand.
Mm. Okay. So the furniture, the way it looks, the size, the fabric, the color, that is something known for the customers. They know this before. What about the experience of how do you sit on it?
Yeah, so it depends on which market you're in. So we're obviously, where we're more established in the UK, we have a mixture of stores, like shopping shops within retailers. So we've got our own shop in London. We're opening 3 more shops later this year, but we also have partners, and we've been a partner with a big company in the UK called John Lewis, who are a mm-hmm. you know, fairly major retailer. And you can try our sofas in those stores.
Okay.
In Germany, it's direct to consumer only. So we offer a 100-day money back guarantee with free returns if you don't like it, because there's nowhere to, well, there is one. There is, we have one partner store in Berlin who you can go and try the sofa. Mm-hmm. But we realize that, you know, that's just one place out of a very big country. So, you know, we offer that 100-day free returns if you don't like it. And that's kind of our offering, really. And we are looking to roll out more stores, our own stores within Germany in 2027. So we think it's a very important part of the purchase journey for furniture. Absolutely.
Probably not many people are using the opportunity to send back a sofa, or is that...
No, not that many. It's less than kind of 8%. You know, so it's fairly low. But we know that if you've been to see it in a shop, it's less than 1%. So, you know, there's obviously a big difference there. But I'd much rather customers have the ability to return it should they want to, than, you know, have big high returns fees or you can't return it. It's not right. Like, you know, this is a big ticket thing. You have your house, your holidays, and then your furniture. And they're normally the most expensive things you buy. And it really shouldn't be a nasty experience.
Let's talk about your product. I know you started with one sofa. Sofa number one was called, which was available in various colors. Now you have extended your portfolio of products. And so how does it, because what you promised today is speed, it is easy handling, it is a quality, that's what you said. But what about, let's say, design and other products? How do you come to new products? How do you, what do you have, people that are designing this for you or find out what the customers want to have?
Yeah, look, we do all the design ourselves in-house. We always have done. So we design our own products with our own design team. We look at it, because we have to hold inventory, we have to be disciplined. We can't just do a design and see if it sells. And there's, you know, there's risk for us. So that naturally means that we're a lot more particular about what we launch, which I think is a good thing. We're not just launching 10 things to hope one is a success. We have to be as confident as we can be that something will be successful. We look at it from various lenses, but the first one is, are we able to solve a problem, like an actual real world problem, like access issues or comfort or storage or multi-functionality? Like, if we can do that and that we think we can solve an issue, we will gravitate towards that kind of product. So there's our first thing. We try and be problem solvers first.
Mm-hmm.
If we can't identify a problem to solve with the product, but we think we can do one really well and apply all of our criteria, easy, fast, high quality, then we will do it. But we'll do it and we'll try and design a piece. We don't really design to price points. We don't design from loads of customer surveys, but we just try and design a piece that we think is really aesthetically pleasing. Mm. And we're like, do we want this in our home?
Mm.
And we can tell quite quickly if the team are excited and everyone's asking when it's going to launch and people want one themselves, it's normally the best indicator we've got that this is going to be a success, you know?
Mm.
So we really just design things to solve problems we have as individuals or that we really want as individuals. And we try and keep it that simple. And the only times we've gone really wrong are when we've lost sight of one or both of those things.
Mm. You said you're having your own store in London, for example. How many products can you find in that store? Is that like a normal furniture store or?
It's in the city center. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively small. It's not like an out of town retail park. We can get about 80% of our revenue within the store. So we can't have every sofa in every size and every fabric, but we can represent 80% of our revenue. So it's about 1,000 square meters.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's pretty big. So that means you're not just a warehouse where you can see the product, but you do give some inspiration
It's a proper retail shop. It's on a busy part of central London, you know, just off of the high street. It's got a nice glass frontage. You can come and have a coffee. There's other retailers around. There's restaurants. You know, it's a nice day out.
Okay, great. And that is the model that you want to bring to Germany as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, furniture retail everywhere has been pushed out of the centres to big parks around urban areas. And I believe that's left space for someone to go and own the city centre and the city living. You know, I don't want to have to get in my car and drive out of town. And, you know, the only place to eat nearby is a McDonald's because there's no nice restaurants. Like, I want to wander down the street. I want to talk to someone. I want to see something nice. I want to have some coffee. I'm going to go to the park later to see my friends. Like, I believe that's the, you know, especially since COVID, that's the kind of weekends people want to have.
Mm.
You know, spending a day at a retail park is just not high on anyone's list.
No, that is something you can see here in Hamburg. I would say this is 2 or 3 years ago that West Wing came into the city center, and then I went around and looked how many new furnitures did you find in the city center. There were about 11, not the big ones, but smaller ones, which couldn't afford the rent before. But after COVID, when the price went down, suddenly there was space and they moved, the furniture people moved into this and show the people what they have. And many of them did e-commerce only before, and but now they want to they want that people can grab and sit and just find out what they are buying.
Or I look at it this way as well, like there's also a benefit to decide not to buy. You know, if someone is only going to return it anyway, I'd much rather they came decide it's not for them, have some help from our staff or shop somewhere else, that's fine. But like, you know, we lose money when someone returns something. So I would be much happier if everyone came to be sure first.
Good. Now, let's talk a bit about international business. You said before your team is deciding about the products. I don't know where they are located. They're in London or if they're sitting in your head office in Portugal. But I have been working for international companies, and I know exactly that when the head office was in London, in Dublin, or in Stockholm, the first step was always, well, our product is so good and selling in our own country, so we will just duplicate and do the same in Germany. And there was always this learning process of, well, the Germans are different. Not talk completely, of course, but there's always this 10-20% where you need whether adjustments or just not doing products or doing something more what the Germans are needing. So how do you deal with that?
Well, we've got designers. We don't have a head office as such. We're a remote business.
Oh, okay.
We have been since the start. So we have designers that are in Ireland, the UK and Portugal. So we do have quite a nice mix of inputs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We did exactly what you just described. We said, okay, we've got our current portfolio. We'll launch that and see what works. It wasn't from a position of our products are so good. It was more of a, our products are all we have, so mm-hmm. we're going to try these first, and then we'll see. And now in our product roadmap, we now factor in our new product what we think might work best for the German market, and it is different. Mm-hmm. You know, the styles that are popular are different. The dimensions people need are slightly different. The type of living in Germany is very different to the UK, actually, not even slightly. It's a very different home, you know, lots of more kind of apartments, a lot more of your buildings are more modern than ours, you know, and you're also a much more spaced out population. So like, you know, you've got a bigger population, but over a lot larger land mass. So that has some things to consider.
But an older as well, unfortunately.
Sorry?
We are older in Germany than anywhere else in the world. That's the other thing that,
yeah, exactly. So we see success with product that steers towards that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're very successful. Like our biggest market is the UK, but even within that, like actually it's almost half of our UK revenue is London.
Mm.
Right. So when you think of, it can be quite easy to make the mistake of thinking, at a population level, the UK and Germany are similar, but actually, like as you'll know, like retail and detail is the same thing. And actually, if you compare London's demographic and way of living to Germany as a whole, they couldn't be more different.
Mm-hmm.
London and Hamburg might be relatively similar, but London and Germany are not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. I agree with you. We feed it back into our new product process. And I just think over time we will be bent into shape by our customers as long as we listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that will be the biggest learning process from my personal experience, that you adjust from
I'm
the
sure
beginning.
You're right.
Because sometimes customers do not come a second or a third time, even if you have changed something. So you need to do it right from the very beginning. But yeah, I don't want to be critical. I'm only saying from my personal experience.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think, you know, we didn't have the resources to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but what we see is some of our product that's extremely popular in Germany is not our list of top 10 bestsellers in both countries. They are
same.
Completely different.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
Completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh.
In the UK, we're a sofa bed company that sells some chairs. And in Germany, we're a dining chair company that sells some sofa beds.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in Germany, dining at home, inviting friends to your home place is much more important than in the UK. In the UK, you very often meet your friends after work in the pubs or in the restaurants. In Germany, you meet them at home. That's quite different. So, but that's good for your business because you need nice chairs, tables, and kitchens.
That's it.
Yeah. So, growing your business, I see on the one hand side you start with sofa number one. Now you. I can't really. I looked on the website. I think you have 50. Roughly 50 different products in the moment. Can be more?
Probably about 50, yeah. 15 sofas, then garden, and then, furniture is probably around 50.
Yeah, okay. So one possibility is to grow the number of products. The other one is grow the number of, let's say, areas where you go to with your e-commerce activities. And the third one is grow your parallel, your retail activities outside the UK in other countries again. So you're yeah. doing everything, as I assume.
Yeah, we are. We're going to try and grow our retail footprint in real stores, like physical stores in the UK, Ireland and Germany. We're also going to try and grow our e-commerce within those countries. And we've still got a very aggressive product roadmap ahead of us. You know, we've got another three sofas coming out at the end of July. We have more furniture coming. This year was our first year selling garden, but we didn't sell the garden furniture in Germany. So next year we'll launch garden in Germany and Ireland. So, you know, that's been a real win for us, because the summer is a tough time for sofa retailers. So the garden's really helped. So yeah, we'll continue those three. We'll probably pause the overall international growth now for the next couple of years. We'll focus on these three markets.
Okay.
We will focus on our product roadmap and focus on our physical retail operation.
Okay. I read somewhere that Austria is that, do you see Austria like similar to Germany or as a part because of the language, or is that a new
similar country? We did open an Austrian website for a bit. We paused it for the moment. We found the logistics incredibly challenging to get cost effective. So it's somewhere I'd like to go back to, but you know, sometimes just a little bit more focus on the German market is probably a good thing. Like, you know, we need to earn the right to go past that.
Germany is difficult enough.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is big, but there are, retail is difficult at the moment. You know, people are very cautious buying new things, and they're very specific sometimes.
Yeah, that's what we've noticed. Yeah. But what it does mean is that when the flip side of that, which is a positive thing as a retailer, is like, you can then be quite sure if you do get your product design right and you position it well, that very specific customer who's looking for that specific thing, you know, they'll be very, very happy. And, you know, that's also a good thing. And they're likely to come back. You know, the customers that know exactly what they're looking for, they can be your best customers.
Yeah, definitely. And they will tell others. Yeah.
Exactly,
So when you run your retail stores, how will you connect this with your e-commerce activities? Is there any, I mean, as you have reinvented the logistic in production and service and delivering, is there anything that you have in mind to do different than others?
I think for me, it's about having it seamless. You know, it should feel like it's all one transaction and you're one customer. So we put a lot of time into making sure if you come into our store and you've taken a fabric swatch from us, for example, we give out thousands of those a week. When you go to check out, it's all done through an iPad, and that iPad that the team member has, if you've ordered that fabric already, when you come to place your order, your account is all set up, everything is done, we know where we're delivering it to. We add the items, you check it on the screen, you press OK, and you just tap with your phone and it's good, done. And the delivery date, you get text a date, you pick a date, and then you get a text to say if you want to change it, you can change it. So we've tried to make that checkout experience in store as like seamless as possible. And I think that's really important. And vice versa, should you want to come into store and just build the quote, it gets sent to you. Your account's already set up. If you click through, it takes you straight to the online checkout. You can just pay there and then, you know that it's all been done for you. So I think that's really important. It might not sound like it's revolutionizing the physical store experience, but it means that we can much faster serve customers. You know, we've all been there. You go and check into a nice hotel and you stand at the front desk for 20 minutes. They type your email address back in again, and then they ask for your phone number, and then you sign 9 pieces of paper. Like, it's just not slick, and it's all about building that trust, isn't it? Like, if we can't make the ordering process nice, how are we going to get a sofa to you the very next day? Like, they're just not going to believe it. And so we put a lot of time and thought into that part of the process to allow people to really buy however they're comfortable. And if that's not in the store, that's totally fine. Like, we'll text you the link, and it'll come on email as well, and you can just click buy whenever you want, or phone us. You know, I'm really big on having people answer the phone within 3 rings, even as an e-commerce first business. Like, I really hate this whole idea that you should try and get as many people to not call you as possible. Like, it's just completely and utterly wrong. You know, if someone's looking for a phone number, it's not because they can't be bothered to look somewhere else. It's because they want to talk to someone, and that's totally fine.
Very good, like, quote. Yeah, very good. I like this.
You know, you have to meet our customers where they're at. And that's our only job, is meet them where they are and give them the best service we can at that moment in time.
How do you find the people for your organization that have the same kind of mindset?
It takes a long time. We have a very, very low acceptance rate, on especially for our customer facing roles. We maybe hire 1 in 30 people that we interview. We have a very well-documented profile of person we're looking for. Not person, but behaviors, actually. What behaviors do we want to see in people?
Yeah.
You know, we want them to be curious and humble. We want them to be ambitious and also, you know, open to new ideas and personable. And we test for those things. And then we try our best to look after them as best we can. And we pay above the market rate. We have a very generous, uncapped commission scheme. We have good benefits and conditions to work in. You know, it's not my, I'd say to my team, it's not my job to make you happy, but it is my job to create an environment in which it's possible to be very happy.
And to work very effectively.
And to work well. And, like, you know, happy people tend to make a lot of money for you. And we've got a really good retention rate. So if I look at our, from a commercial standpoint, you know, just typically I know retail has a high staff turnover. But if I look at our telesales team, our customer service team, and our store retail team, our retention rate from hiring to 12 months is in the mid-90s. And then if they've been here 6 months, you know, after 6 months, it's like closer to 100% retention rate still. So, you know, we have a, we my store managers and my commercial leaders, you know, are clearly doing a very good job to keep those people happy, because you know, retail's hard. Like,
no, it is.
It's tough. It's not glamorous. It's unsociable hours. You're dealing with the public, most of whom are wonderful people, but some are very difficult, you know. And you're normally on pretty low wages, and you want to build a life and a career, and you want to have some stability. So, you know, we only offer full-time roles, which I think is important. You know, I'm not a big fan of lots of like 0 hours or low hours shift work. I think that furniture is a very high trust sale, and you need people that are well trained to help the customer feel safe to make the purchase. You know, it's not toothpaste.
No, I really appreciate what you're saying about your customer centricity, so to say, that you, and the other part that that your own people are treated very well, because I think as well this is the base of success. I mean, if it is only data driven, as many people think in the e-commerce part, sometimes I get the impression it can't work, especially not in retail.
Yes, especially not retail. Like, well, not anything, but yeah, retail is like retail in itself. You've had an amazing career in retail, so you would have seen this time and time again. But in the whole thing is an experience because retail, in theory, shouldn't exist. If it was just a monetary transaction, goods for a price, we would all just go to factories and buy a piece ourselves, and we would go out of our way to find the lowest possible price, and retail wouldn't exist. But it does. Yeah. And it exists because shopping itself is a behavior that people like to take part in.
Yeah.
And if people when retailers forget that, that's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. I remember the guys that I heard through in these COVID times who dreamed of a world without retail, said e-commerce is the big winner. But I always thought, no, the people like to go out. They like to meet. They want to see nice stores. They like storytelling and all this. And of course, many are making mistakes, no doubt. Huh? But there has been a lot of innovation in the last 5 years.
No. Yeah, absolutely. Like, if it was just about the result, we'd all go on holiday to sunbeds instead of Greece, right? Because we'd all have the same result, but we know it's not that. And, we get clouded by all this data. I don't know if that translates very well for your German audience. We have all this data and we forget that the fundamental driver for people is that it's a behavior they engage in that makes them feel good. So we have to make them feel good.
Yeah, that's all about. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm just looking to the time. My last question is, I was thinking about platforms. For example, in Germany is this Möbel.de. Maybe you've heard about this. I'm sure you know. So is that anything that you considered for your sales operations?
Yeah, we are looking at it. That one in particular actually has come up, and we've had some discussions. The reason I didn't launch via those platforms to start with is I wanted to make sure we had the experience of delivery up to my standard and the standard of the brand, and that we had that immediate feedback and we could make sure there was nothing in between us and the customer clouding any of the feedback loops that we value so much. Now we're more confident on that. We will look at these platforms as a way to help get out there and to get our product in front of more people, but as a stage two. So yeah, I think they definitely have their place. I just don't typically like, especially with new things, I don't like other variables or barriers or filters between my customer and myself.
Okay. Oh, great. Then I can only say good luck.
Thank you.
For all your attempts to convince the German customers. I'm sure you will with what you told me. And very good business for the next couple of years.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ja, das war's mal wieder vom Retail Talker. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und dann bis demnächst mal wieder. Ciao, ciao.